from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. California issued new rules yesterday to regulate hazardous chemicals in consumer products. And under the Green Chemistry Initiative back in 2008, which went into law, the state will require manufacturers to find safer alternatives to harmful toxins in baby bottles, laundry detergents, and other everyday products. In this segment, we want to discuss how these rules will affect you, customers, manufacturers, Californians. Carl Palmer joins us. He's chief of the Safer Products and Workplace Program with the California Department of Toxic Substances Control, and the department's new regulations actually went into effect just yesterday. Carl Palmer, thanks for joining us. Welcome.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Good to have you. Also good to have with us Maureen Gorzin, who is a partner who represents manufacturers and industry facilities at the Sacramento branch. She's with Alston & Byrd, a national law firm. She's also a former director of the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. And welcome, Maureen Gorzin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Mike Wilson's here in studio with us. He's an environmental health scientist and directs the Labor Occupational Health Program at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. He also served on the California Green Chemistry Science Advisory Panel. Welcome, Mike Wilson.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Carl Palmer, I'm going to begin with you and just begin by getting really an explanation as best you can provide. I know that we had thousands of these chemicals. We got down to about 164 of concern, and we've got five categories and four-step process, a lot to sort of sort through here. But maybe just give us an overview of what these guidelines mean. What do they mean to consumers? What do they mean to industry?
Sure. Happy to. Well, as you said, it's a stepwise process. And what we're doing is historically, often government has said, you industry must limit a chemical in a product at a certain level that's safe. And this is a different framework where we're saying we are identifying a bunch of chemicals that have certain hazard traits of concern, and we're asking industry, rather than saying you must do it this way or that way, we're asking them to say, look at a specific product that contains one of these chemicals. Do an evaluation of, is there a better, safer way to make that product? Can you change the design? Can you change the product that hits the streets and hits the consumers to make it safer? And once they do that, then they're going to tell us about their proposal on how to do that. And we're going to say, great, that's a great idea. Or we're going to say, you know, you need to do some more work to either get more information, or you need to provide more information, say, to consumers about that product. And ultimately, if it isn't safer or doesn't meet the needs of the consumer to protect people and the environment, we might say you need to limit the sale or restrict that product in some manner.
This has been described as a sea change in California's management of toxic chemicals, but you're going to come up against, obviously, a lot of legal challenges.
Potentially. I mean, we've been very careful, and we've gone through a very long process, a regulatory process that we've engaged with all the stakeholders about how we're going to do this and the requirements in the law and in the regulations, and we're very confident that we've done a good job of that. So, you know, of course, we can be challenged, but we're prepared to deal with that if it comes.
And Mike Wilson, the Toxic Substance Control Act, which was passed back in the 70s, actually allowed for the EPA or gave them the power to require testing of dangerous compounds. The EPA has rarely used it, though, haven't they?
You know, since 1976, the EPA has been able to effectively require testing for about 200 of the 85,000 chemicals that are in commercial use in the U.S. They've been able.
It's not a lot.
No, it's pretty weak, and essentially, you know, TSCA is well recognized as an extraordinarily weak tool for EPA to protect public and environmental health. And I think what California is doing here is stepping into the breach after I think what has been a 9-year process to bring some order to the chemicals market, to the buying and selling of chemicals. It's a massive market. Carl Palmer just described some of the details of the regulation, but stepping back with the resolution here a bit, we buy and sell about 82,000 tons of chemically formulated products every day in the state of California. It's about a little over 4 pounds per person, and that it's growing every year. It's almost completely unregulated. To your point about TSCA, it is shot through with genuinely dangerous chemicals, and in the the sort of upshot of that is that this massive market is chaotic and it's confusing for businesses that buy and sell products, for product designers, for public purchasers, governments, for workers, and for members of the public.
Well, and legislators, I think it's safe to say, did not feel very confident with their lack of expertise on a number of these consumer products. I mean, we had lead in jewelry, talk about kids' toys, about chemical softeners and baby water bottles. And so it became almost incumbent to move in this direction. And it's away from a more piecemeal approach. I mean, they're now, I think it's safe to say, aren't they concerning more with the environment as well as people?
Well, that's exactly right, and that was the origins of these regulations and the implementing legislation from Mike Fuhr, Democrat of L.A., and AB 1879, where the legislature well recognized that this this process of trying to bring a single chemical before legislative hearings and make a determination about whether that chemical should be banned or not, or what action should be taken out of the 85,000 chemicals in commercial use, was just a very weak approach to industrial policy. And frankly, it left businesses with a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen next. And it didn't really address genuine public and environmental health problems in a rational way, in a prioritized way, which I think this regulation, for the first time in the U.S., is setting out to achieve.
It's some real obstacles, though. I was just thinking about the example of flame retardants. We don't even know where a lot of those chemicals are coming from.
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, this is part of the problem. When you have 85,000 substances in commercial use, we know we have over 200 substances, including flame retardants, that have been identified in human blood, in a cross-sectional sample of the U.S. And so this is a problem that we are way, way behind on in trying to solve. And, so California is sort of stepping up and trying to get its hands around this massive market that has complicated health and environmental problems associated with it.
Again, Dr. Mark Wilson is with the UC Berkeley School of Public Health and served on the California Green Chemistry Science Advisory Panel. Maureen Gorzin is a partner who represents manufacturers and industry facilities at the Sacramento branch of Alston and Byrd, which is a national law firm, and she's former director of the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. And to some extent, Maureen Gorzin, industry or manufacturers have kind of stepped up here. Walmart and Procter & Gamble already have initiatives to phase out hazardous chemicals and getting ahead of the regulations. But there's a lot of lobbying still going on by product manufacturers and by the chemical lobby. What's the concern?
Well, the concern is that, the regulations, which became effective yesterday, 72 pages of them, set out a process for submitting data and analysis to the state. And it's a very open-ended process. It's not clear what the boundaries on what's going to be required are. And when, the technical folks and companies open the regulations and look at them, they say, geez, I don't know that I can comply with this. I'm not even sure what's required of me. So there's a lot of concern when that is so unknown and they can't put boundaries on it and they're not sure how the state will judge what they submit. They're not sure how to determine what is safer. There doesn't appear to be weighting criteria in the regs or standards that they can design to. So it's the open-ended paperwork process that has them very concerned, and they've wanted to have a lot more definitive boundaries and compliance criteria built into the regs, and it's not there. So that's why they feel like they need to continue to educate the state, talk to the state about what they're going to need to be able to get into compliance.
Aside from what you've located as concerns about complexity and uncertainty and boundaries, isn't there also a lot of, frankly, agitation and frustration about who will have to comply?
Yeah, there is. When I go and talk to industry groups or to our clients, that is the number one question I get. Where can I find the list of products that are going through this reg? And it doesn't exist. So everybody's wondering who's going to get picked. And what are the factors, and how are they going to know?
And you say what, Carl Palmer, to those concerns of industry?
Sure, yes. Well, as Maureen pointed out, this is the original statute and our regulations are a process-driven regulation. There aren't specific standards for a specific product or chemical, which is, as Mike referred to, is what the legislature historically had done. What we've done is put in place a process, and there's a couple of key changes to that. One is that the process then shifts from the state saying, well, we know best about this chemical, and this should be the level in this product. We're shifting that over to the people who actually make the product, and we're asking them the question, do you need to put this chemical in your product? And if so, tell us why. Is there a better, safer alternative to that chemical in this product? Take a look. You tell us, does it work? We still want the product to work. We still want the consumer to get the value of that product working in their home or in their business, but we want it to be safer. So we've asked the people who know how to make it to do the analysis and to use good science and the information that they have to tell us how to make it better. It's not prescriptive in that we don't presume to say we're going to tell you you can only put this chemical in your product at this level. We're asking the question. Once we get the answer and the expertise and scientists and engineers and designers in industry who make these things, once they do their job, we'll take a look and evaluate that.
But I think, Maureen Gorson, as I understand it, you're saying this is pretty vague. And also, I would imagine it must be an onus for some of small businesses who have to go into this assessment.
Yeah, and there are a lot of companies that don't think they can comply. They're not sure what's going to be asked of them. Also, the supply chain is very complex, and the rules don't specify who has to do this. There's the manufacturer, the importer, the distributor, the retailer, and because parts and materials and components are made all over the world, we're not sure how the state's going to define the product, and so people are not sure who in the supply chain is going to have these duties. We're expecting some chaos because we don't know how the product's going to be defined, and there's only a 60-day period to get in your notices that, yes, I'm in or I'm out. So there's a lot of trepidation about how that's going to work and how they're going to figure out who has the responsibility to even supply all this data and analysis.
Well, let me ask Mike Wilson, what about the concern that's expressed here about the vagueness of these new regulations? And, is there a template, for example, for alternative analysis? And what about the supply chain?
Mm-hmm. DTSC is going to be developing guidelines for alternatives analyses that companies are going to need to comply with, and as Carl Palmer has said, I think the state has wisely asking companies to devote their talent and resources to identifying safer alternatives. To well-recognized hazardous substances. And I just want to point out here that, the department has been extraordinarily careful in getting its hands around a very complicated industrial problem. And Maureen Gorson just pointed to sort of what is at the heart of this problem, and that is that businesses operating in California and every business across the U.S. for that matter has extraordinarily poor information on the hazardous properties of the chemicals that they are purchasing, that they're putting into products, and that they're putting on their shelves. As you said, Michael, Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Staples, HP, Kaiser, a number of important companies are stepping into the breach with their own systems, given the failure and the federal policy and the lack of action on this. What's finally happening in California is we are bringing some order to what has been a chaotic market, and the first thing the state has done is, as you could probably imagine yourself, looking at a set of 85,000 chemicals, what would you do first? You'd probably step back and say, okay, how can we begin to prioritize this? Where do we start? And that's exactly what DTSC has done. They've identified 1,200 chemicals that authoritative bodies around the world have recognized are hazardous to human or environmental health, and for which there is really no question left about that issue, you know, about the health and environmental effects. And placed for the first time that information up on the web.
So these are not precautionary principles. These are things that have incontrovertibly been.
Now, these are authoritative, bodies, the International Agency for Research on Cancer and so forth, that have definitively concluded these are substances for which there is no longer a question about their health and environmental impacts. And DTSC has compiled that information in a very useful way. They've placed it on the web, and that sends a very important signal to the market.
We actually have a link on our website to the official government regulations, which you can go and avail yourself of. And actually, at this point, we'd like to hear from you. So let me tell you how you can join us. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We're talking about the state issuing new hazardous chemical regulations just yesterday, and the new rules have come down to regulate hazardous chemicals and consumer products. And under the Green Chemistry Initiative, which is a 2008 law, the state will require manufacturers to find safer alternatives to harmful toxins in such things as baby bottles, laundry detergents, and other everyday products, and discussing how those rules will affect you and manufacturers. So feel free to join us. Again, toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or again, use our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talking with Dr. Mike Wilson, environmental health scientist and director of the Labor Occupational Health Program at UC Berkeley School of Public Health, and with Maureen Gorzin, a partner representing manufacturers and industry facilities at the Sacramento branch of Alston & Byrd, a national law firm, and with Carl Palmer, chief of the Safer Products and Workplaces Program with the California Department of Toxic Substances Control. Here's a Facebook comment from Barbie, who says, how about we start with a list of chemicals that are banned in the EU? We put together that list and then work from there. And Mike Wilson nodding his head appreciatively to that idea.
Well, it's certainly part of what DTSC has done on their list of authoritative of chemicals.
Yeah, let me just add that.
It's Carl Palmer.
Yeah, our list, there's 23 different lists that we've identified where we're pulling this information, as Mike said, and it's from authoritative bodies. Those chemicals are not really in question about do they pose some potential harm to people or the environment. So we've identified those. And then what it's important to note that the next step to address Maureen's concern about the uncertainty is we're going to, sometime after the first of the year, identify a handful of products, specific products, that contains some of those specific chemicals. And those are where we're going to focus initially. It's going to be a relatively slow process. We're going to say, look at these products, and then we're going to go through a regulatory process for each of those products to say, okay, we're going to put these out there and require that the manufacturers go through this alternatives analysis process. In that adoption of those initial products, we will be getting information. It'll be a very open public process so that we'll be able to get information from manufacturers, from the public, from consumers, from people in the supply chain. And once we go through that process, it'll be much more clear in terms of which products industry is going to have to evaluate, and it'll be very specific. And so that addresses some of those concerns.
But you're not talking about, for example, I mean, people say something's carcinogenic. cranberries are carcinogenic. Well, yeah, but, you have to have a ton of cranberries before you have to worry about that. So we're also talking about the volume of toxics, aren't we?
Yes, I mean,
in products,
both the statute and our regulations outline specific criteria, and the two basic ones are, is there a potential harm from one of these chemicals, and are people exposed to it? Is there significant harm that can come from one of these products containing one of those chemicals? And it may be because that chemical causes cancer, or it may be something that is a mutagen, or a host of other, endpoints that are problematic for people or the environment. So once we get into this process, then we're going to be asking the manufacturers to take a look. And the other thing is, I think that when you look at the list of chemicals, the scientists that look at it go, okay, that makes sense. But part of the equation that Maureen alludes to is that people want to know what's out there. And we're not the only ones that are concerned about this. Consumers want to know what's in their product that might be harmful. manufacturers and retailers want to know as well. And so you see some of these major manufacturers and retailers like Walmart and Procter & Gamble asking of their supply chain to inform them about what's in the products that come through their business, because they want to know, consumers want to know, and we're providing a regulatory process that will help everyone get more information and make smart decisions from the manufacturer of the product to the purchaser who's going to be better informed.
I wonder what you say, and we'll bring Maureen Gorson back in this, and I want to bring our callers in as well, but I'm looking at an email from a listener named Brianne who says, I think it's ridiculous to pass over the control to the companies that manufacture these products. I trust these people to say, let's take a decrease in profit for the sake of consumers is a pipe dream. Do those who propose this forget what country we live in, or are they getting paid to make choices that are not for the greater good of the community?
Well, that's where there's, in our regulation, there is one unique aspect of this, which is we have what are called regulatory responses, so that when we defer to the manufacturer to do this analysis, if it's not good enough, if they haven't done due diligence, if they haven't used good science and engineering, we can then say, as DTSC, that's not good enough. You need to go back. You need to get more information. You need to do more work. You may have to provide the consumer with more information. Or ultimately, you may have to restrict the sale of that product to a certain segment of the consumers, or you may not be able to sell it in California at all. So there is a regulatory authority there which we can have that check and balance.
But Maureen Gorson, are you saying that, again, there just aren't any the clear paradigms for manufacturers and industry, and they need to be clear on this or they can't comply in many instances?
Yeah, the alternatives analysis that is described in the regulations requires a lot of information, but it doesn't tell you how to evaluate that information or how to weight what you find. So if you could make one product with a neurotoxin and another one where there's a study that shows it's the other chemical is an aquatic toxin, what are the criteria that you choose? How do you know which one is safer? There's going to be a lot of multimedia trade-off choices, because every material and every chemical has hazard traits, depending on how they're used. So it is an unknown process. I mean, I think industry would have been a lot happier and more comfortable and less nervous if there had been how-to kind of checklists and templates and weighting criteria in, like, appendices to the regulation, so that their engineers and their technical folks could look at it and say, aha, okay, I know what kind of information I need to be developing. I know what kind of tools I need to be using. I see where this is headed. I can start planning for this. There's not even thresholds on the levels of chemicals that you would have to be studying. So we're waiting for that information, too.
I want to come in here and bring our callers in, and just want to mention again that on our website you can find the official government regulations, kqed.org/forum. First caller, Dick, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm out in Inverness here, and my son's getting ready to build a house. And one of the things I've been trying to talk him into is Western Red Cedar shingles, which, according to the code out here, the building codes, have to be flame retardant. And I'm so where does he stand? Is this going to be a situation like asbestos, where 20 years from now you're going to have guys in masks and hazmat uniforms to take it off the walls?
Carl Palmer.
Well, you know, Dick makes a point that our regulations do address in the process, which is we're not just looking at something that's bad and wanting to get rid of. We're asking the question of, if you get rid of that, what are you going to use in its place? And does that have a problem as well? And that's been historically one of the challenges with a lot of legislative mandates that say you must get rid of this because it's bad, but it doesn't address how you go about finding out how to replace it with something that's better.
Well, let me thank Dick for his call. I want to bring on as many as I can. Time reminding Regina, you're on with us on Forum. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Okay, so there are laws protecting janitors on the job, but there are no laws protecting people cleaning their own homes or people doing that for money. I've run a green cleaning service for many years, and I know there's a lot of general purpose cleaning products that are way, way too strong and hazardous than they need to be. And so I'm not worried about these companies. They should have been checking all along and known that they're, it's like using a, what do you call it, using a,
Sorry, I don't know what you're...
Sorry, wait. I was looking for an analogy, but it's way too strong. So when it comes to the general purpose cleaners using something like Castile soap, Dr. Bronner's, it's been around for so many years, and my customers are really happy with that. It's zero petrochemicals in it, zero synthetic chemicals in it, and it works amazingly. That and baking soda and vinegar, it really does work. And so just wanted to get that in, that there's been nothing protecting people in their homes. And as far as the flame retardants go, there's going to be a ton of cleanup. Just people have so much clutter in their homes. It's going to be the lower-income people who are living in these little SRO.
Yeah, Regina, I'm glad you got your point in, and I thank you for it. I did, in the interest of time here, want to go to another caller, though, and it's Donald, who's an environmental lawyer and has some information about Congress. Donald, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Michael, and thank you to all your participants. I've been working for 20 years, seeing the chemical industry and their activities to basically fight against all sense of regulation because it's in their profiteering interest to do so. And there's actually a... TSCA is up for renewal and extension right now. It's being debated in Congress, and it contains a provision that is common in a lot of federal laws that says any attempts by states to do anything in the field that is being governed by the federal law is wiped out. It's called preemption. And the language that is actually in federal TSCA right now would provide the chemical industry the ability to challenge all of our current labeling laws and certainly this green chemistry initiative to have it wiped out.
Now, that's an important point. We're coming toward an end here. I mean, Mike Wilson, he's right. It could be preempted. Technically, it could be trumped just like federal law over state law on marijuana or something like that.
It would be hugely problematic for California. And I think, you know, the California is really sort of is setting out a model, what actually could be successful. For the federal government to preempt that would certainly be a setback.
Does that seem like a legal tact, Maureen Gorzin, down the line?
I've read the TSCA reform bill, and the preemption provision is really quite narrow. This law, the green chemistry law that we're talking about, would continue to be in full force and effect.
All right. We'll have to leave it there because we've come to the end of the hour. Let me thank you, Maureen Gorzin. Thanks to Dr. Mike Wilson. Thanks to Carl Palmer. And thanks, of course, to you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. I want to also thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.